This week, Ghostbusters casting rumors. Shudder is having a ball with its upcoming TV show. Luke R.I. Perry? And Blu-ray special editions abound. Sam shares his list of choices for films for Now Slang, which probably don't feature any porn parodies this week, unfortunately. And we kick off with March's theme, Wicked Westerns, with our first film, Grim Prairie Tales. So come, join us by the fire as we share stories, keep warm, and hit the trail to terror in Podnito.
Listen to them, children of the night. What music they make.
Well, yeehaw.
Well, hi there.
Howdy, partners.
Howdy.
As always, I'm Palmer. I'm joined by my fellow compatriots, Alex and Sam.
Well, a good day to you.
Good day.
Good day. Evening.
My wagon broke.
Someone kicked my horse.
Oh, not the horse. That's punishable by the death.
By the death.
It's our first episode for March. The sun done set on February. And we're ready to spit shine our leather. Have ourselves a damn good hog-killing time. So gather your spurs, unlatch them horses, and let's stride into the wild, wild west together.
God, you make the worst cowboy.
Like, what the fuck is this guy talking
Don't
about?
Don't get all balled up now. Just because we're having a good time, we're here ready to get horrific with the content. We've got some choice cuts, some primo slices of God's good country all lined up. And ready to rustle. We're exploring the darker side of the Wild West this month. We've got a list of some truly terrifying flicks that pit man against the elements just as much as they do against themselves. But let's bilk, boast, and bully our ways through some of a simpler time. A time of violence. A time of evening redness in the West.
Are we watching City Slickers?
Don't squat with your spurs on.
Don't do it. Don't do it. How you guys doing?
Don't dig for water under the outhouse.
That sounds like a personal lesson learned.
Oh, yeah. Tell your dog that.
Right? Don't go in if you don't know the way out.
That's just good advice in every situation, I think. Just in general, really. Just in general.
These are things a cowboy should not do.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. So, how are we? How are we this week, folks?
I'm good. Is this a free cowboy song?
It is.
I'm exhausted from all the rustling I've done this week.
All the rustling. Would you say that you've rustled your jimmies?
Your jimmies are rustled. Cattle, but sure.
Okay. All right. Well, you can go with cattle, too.
Both.
Cattle's jimmies.
My cattle's jimmies. They're jimmies.
Jimmying your cattle's?
Yeah. Cattling. I was wrestling my cattle's jimmies.
I'd be a prospector if I was a cowboy.
Would you? What are you going to do?
Women weren't allowed in the Old West.
Where we can be whores and barmaids, right?
We'll get to That's that later. I have a whole commentary on James Earl Jones later on. The
I want to be a prospector.
I don't blame you. And plenty of women wanted to be prospecting back in them days.
Prospecting
gold?
For a husband.
Shut the fuck up. Treat a woman like a racehorse and she'll never be a nag.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. Horses nagged you.
I think. I don't even know. I don't even know. All I do know is that the Western music stopped.
But I didn't. I just started looking up cowboy phrases, and I am good to go.
I thought they all started and ended with yeehaw.
I mean, I can put on another one. You thought that was the only track I had ready to go? Please, y'all don't know me. Y'all don't know who I is.
When in doubt, let your horse do the thinking.
Is that a... I feel like that's just terrible advice.
They're not very smart.
Who's they?
Horses.
All of them and cowboys.
I mean, that one depends on the cowboy itself.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I bet there were probably plenty of horses smarter than their owners back in those days.
I'm sure there are still lots of horses that are smarter than their owners.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably true. I feel like we've exhausted our welcome to the West.
Yeah.
I feel like we're just getting started.
I'm going to keep this article of cowboyisms up, though, to just pepper throughout the episode.
Perfect. Girl.
You mean dad a girl.
Dad a girl. Let's jump into some horror headlines.
Headlines.
All right. Got a whole bunch of stuff on the list this week. Whole bunch of stuff. First off, star of It and Stranger Things, Finn Wolfhard, is in talks to be a part of the new Ghostbusters film. Carrie Coon as well. Carrie Coon as well, yeah. We're waiting for filming to begin this summer on Jason Reitman's Ghostbusters, which continues the original franchise and may feature the original cast. It's pretty exciting. But Variety has reported that Finn Wolfhard is in talks. As, like I said, it's Carrie Coon, who was in Widows, in case you didn't know. Variety states that the studio would not comment on plot details, but sources say that the story will focus on a single mom and her family, with Coon playing the mom and Wolfhard playing her son. There's not much else to take away from this, but there is some speculation that since Carrie Coon's character is a single mother, that they might just be the family of the late Egon Spengler.
Isn't Finn Wolfhard a bit young for that?
Maybe.
Like, I don't know.
To be
like
his...
continuity-wise?
Right.
Maybe he's an older dad.
Maybe. You're right.
That
is a thing.
That is a thing.
The kid in Chucky's like twice the age of the old Chucky, so I mean, I don't really think anything matters anymore.
You're right.
But that's a reimagining.
Okay.
This is a continuation.
Are you trying to say old people can't have kids?
No! That's not what I'm saying at all.
That is exactly what you're saying.
I did.
Children is a young person's game.
I did really find it interesting, though, that the comments in the Bloody Disgusting article really delved completely away from movie into just people debating if Finn Wolfhard was overplayed or not. Like, if he was in too many things.
I'd actually probably agree with that.
How much is he in?
He's been in Stranger Things and It. And then that new...
That's too many things? That's too many two things.
Far then, too many things.
And then the...
You just don't like any of the kids from...
Stranger Things?
From Stranger Things.
No.
You hate 11.
I just dislike 11.
Well, apparently you think Finn Wolfhard's overplayed
now,
problem.
Too. I have no problem with
He was
Finn
in the
Wolfhard.
Music video of the...
He's in so
new,
much shit.
The new Weezer music video.
Yeah.
So that's three
He
things.
Was in the cold open. And Weezer's Take on Me. Carmen Sandiego.
You don't watch Carmen Sandiego.
You're right.
Yeah,
wait, that's a show?
Yeah, they rebooted it.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
reimagining.
So, well, people seem to be very split between if, you know, in too many things or if
he was in Ninja Sex Party.
Not enough things. People are comparing him to Corey Feldman.
You think he's going to burn out while he's young?
I don't know.
Corey Feldman was legitimately in a ton of shit.
Yeah, Corey Feldman and Corey Haim.
Yeah,
both
of them. I don't feel like Finn Wolfhard's been in that much.
No.
Apparently he was
maybe it's because like all
got
the,
a director credit.
Maybe it's because of all the like press tours and shit they went on because of Stranger Things.
Maybe
that he was just like always on TV for a while.
Yeah,
on
I just
talk shows.
Yeah, I just hope that the new Ghostbusters isn't like a bunch of kids running around.
But that's
Stranger Things esque. I'm tired of watching kids go on adventures. I'm over it.
I love kids with their adventures.
80s nostalgia with children on adventures.
It makes me feel like a child on an adventure.
No, it makes me feel like I'm not doing anything with my life.
You're not doing anything with your life.
I know I'm not, but
okay.
I don't like to be reminded of
okay.
it.
I need to see kids having fun because there's just Michael Jackson documentaries that just show me that kids didn't have fun back in the day.
No kids had fun when they were on
That's
Neverland
why our
Ranch.
Parents told us to stay inside.
And beat it!
And the buddy system, and to come home as soon as the sun set.
And Stranger Danger.
And Stranger Danger.
Yeah, because Michael Jackson was roaming the streets.
You never know.
He was moonwalking the streets.
Blanket!
He was moonwalking the streets. Moonwalking them streets. But time will tell. Could be a good way to connect all the pieces, though, and honor Harold Ramis as well. This is why I'm just making all the R.I. Perry jokes. All right. Just right there.
Whatever.
Because you just won't even respect Harold Ramis.
I respect Harold Ramis. I respect Ghostbusters. I just don't care about this new one.
I think a lot of people said the same thing about the last one,
I didn't
too.
Care about that one either. I like just saw it.
Fair enough. Did you like it?
It was fine. Exactly. It was fine. I didn't think it was terrible. I didn't think it was amazing. I thought it was, I would give it 50%. Fine.
It was a movie.
It was a movie. It was a movie. I like how I did find that one part really funny where they tried to go to the, to set up their shop, like in the original warehouse where they had it. And they're like, we can't afford this. That was funny.
That was funny, Alex. You're right.
I LOL'd. LOL'd.
They didn't use acronyms like that in the old time, in the old West.
The old time.
It would have been like,
L-O-L.
Oh, well, oh, well, oh, well.
Oh, well.
And then they named their child that.
Yeah. I watched Tommy Lee Jones in No Country for Old Men recently. I know they talk out there.
Got a leaky mouth. That means he's a gossip.
All right. All right. Next up, Critters is back for the first time since 92.
No one cares about Critters.
I don't know. I'm actually like pretty stoked for this. I think this will be fun. I like that they're upping the gore.
I'm just harsh on the Critters train.
There's
a lot of Critters coming out. Considering most fans haven't seen anything from Critters since 92, it's safe to say we're living in the golden age of its resurgence. We got the sci-fi movie coming, and it's just a movie, so they can't cancel.
Yeah, right.
I just want to see like the movies play on sci-fi and halfway through just like just the whole channel to
get
go
it
down.
Off.
I saw someone refer to sci-fi as bye-bye for shows.
That person is speaking my language.
But that movie just wrapped filming and Shudder just offered up a trailer for an upcoming series. The trailer actually looked all right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think it's going to be like winning any awards, but it looks like it'll be fun.
I don't think anyone expects it to win any awards.
That's true. Adam Friedlander and Armand Leo, producers of the sci-fi Tremors sequels, produced the new movie, which looks to have been, well, I guess it's directed by Bobby Miller. There's also a rumor that Dee Wallace, star of the original Critters, could be returning for the film, which seems to derive from her recently being in South Africa for a shoot. So
maybe she was just there on vacation.
Maybe. Who the fuck vacations in South Africa right now? That's my question.
If you want to go on a safari.
Not in South Africa.
People do.
I guess. Isn't it kind of like a tumultuous time right there, right now? Aren't they like out of water and like everybody's getting shot at?
Yeah, they are. I thought they were.
I thought they kind of all banded together and now they're not running out of water.
Maybe. I don't know. My knowledge of global politics and global affairs is really underwhelming.
All I know is I looked up how much it costs to go on a safari, and it is expensive.
Yeah, it's not cheap.
That's why you got to be like a dentist or a doctor to go shoot an animal.
No. Safari is just where you go look at them.
Yeah, and then you pay like a little bit more, and you get to shoot at them, too.
I think it's a lot more to shoot them.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's a lot
And that goes to wildlife conservation.
That's true.
It does.
I hate it, but it does.
It does.
Legal.
And generally, whatever they shoot feeds an entire village for like 3 months.
Yeah. When you do it legally and pay for it, then I think it's
Yeah, because they bring out like the old dying ones and that don't really move and are easy to hit. Or the really mean ones.
They're like
killing
all the other ones.
It was that kind of animals.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no news on a release date about the sci-fi movie, but I imagine we'll be seeing it before the year is up. But fans won't have to wait too long for the TV show. It premieres March 21st and will be available to stream in full exclusively on Shudder.
Oh, yeah.
On that Shudder.
On that Shudder shit.
Next up, Midsommar.
I'm sorry.
Midsommar.
Let's just...
The new film by Ari Aster.
To negate our douchiness, let's just call it Midsommar.
Midsommar! new film by Ari Aster, director of Hereditary, released its first trailer, described as a Scandinavian.
Midsommar.
It's Scandinavian. folk horror film. The movie is ripe with colors. It's got plenty of flowers, scenery.
Yeah, what do you guys think?
I liked it. I mean, it seems to be hitting the same friggin'. A24 is just pumping out the same damn trailer every fucking 3 months now.
What was the noise that they kept making?
I have it on high authority because if you don't, every like 2 minutes, you end up getting thrown into the moaning room.
I got kind of like a Wicker Man vibe from it too.
Oh, yeah, there was that one girl that looked like she ate the bees out of the fucking bee helmet from Wicker Man. I want to know more about her story.
I don't think that she got stung by bees.
I didn't say she got stung by
them. She's Quasimodo's cousin.
Yeah, I think her face just looked
Like she ate them.
I did notice that there was a lot of, like, especially on the kind of graphics, there was lots of women. And I do remember reading from, like, Midsummer, what they actually do, that there's a lot about finding, like, a husband if you put flowers, pillow or some shit.
Maybe those are the ones in the moaning room.
Maybe. So I don't know. It seems to be like focusing on women.
Their microphones every 5 seconds.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It seems like it'll be fun.
I didn't even realize that the description for this says "Think Hereditary meets The Wicker Man."
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Oh,
I didn't even notice that. Mm. I just put the connection with the bees.
Mm. The delivery of the whole trailer is definitely in line with that of Hereditary, copying a lot of the cues, almost blow for blow. Bowing to the trends of modern horror trailers, which Hereditary's trailer essentially created, right? Like, everybody's copying that now. but there's lots of warped music, sudden cuts, scenes of beautiful imagery that give way to extreme tension. One thing I noticed about the trailer is its particular focus on, like, first-person perspective. There's lots of shots that are featuring like eyes opening, similar to that of like an iris shot, but rather like than just the circle closing in, it's more of like eyelids actually opening up.
Oh, I thought you said an Irish shot.
Oh no.
I was like, I don't know that term.
Whiskey.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
We get some
That's
glimpse.
Racist.
No, it's not. It's like a week away from friggin' St. Patrick's Day.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not allowed to talk about it until next week.
We got some glimpses of drug and some herbal use and what looks like the manipulation of minorities.
Huffing some smoke.
Yeah. Some, you know, grotesquely mutated humans.
General cult things.
Yep. Yes.
It was an intriguing trailer, to say the least, and I'm sure we're going to see a lot more of it as we get closer to the film's August 9th release date.
I liked the bright color palette as well. I feel like Hereditary had a very color palette that stood out, being somewhat different than regular horror movies.
Sweet. Yeah, it's definitely very colorful.
You don't see a lot of horror movies with, like, flowers.
You're right. It definitely captures the essence of Midsommar.
Okay.
Moving on, Blue Underground has a 4K restoration of Alex's favorite film, Fulci's New York Ripper, coming to Blu-ray. It's one of my favorite sleazy giallos. It's coming courtesy of Blue Underground, and if it's anything like their recent Maniac release, I think it's fair to say collectors will be very happy. News of this comes from Blu-ray.com, and as of right now, details are scarce, but they're expected to be announced shortly. In the meantime, here's what we do know. It's a 3-disc special edition, which means that it'll probably be Blu-ray, DVD, and CD combo, similar to Maniac's release. It features special cover artwork. And other than that, we don't know much, but you can bet your ass we'll be covering it as more details are released.
And it comes out in June.
It does come out in June, right around my birthday, hopefully. Fingers crossed. Yeah. Next up, Scream Factory is doing a 4K remaster of Joe Dante's original Piranha film. Scream Factory announced earlier this week that we are preparing for a 4K scan of the film from the original negative and have recorded a brand new audio commentary with executive producer Roger Corman. All bonus features from the prior Blu-ray release will be ported over as well. It's jam-packed with a bunch of special features. Audio commentary with Joe Dante, the making of Piranha, which includes the interview with Roger Corman, behind the scenes footage, bloopers, outtakes, stills, galleries, behind the scenes photos, photo gallery, additional scenes from the TV version, theatrical trailers, TV spots, radio spots, all sorts of shit for people who are huge fans of the film. But If that's not enough to entice you, there's a super special edition steelbook release, limited only 5,000 copies, that features some really awesome cover art that I really, really love. If that's not limited enough, you can order directly from Scream Factory and receive an even more limited lithograph print. Only 1,500 of these exist. It better be fast. It better be fast. Here's the best news of all, though. It's coming to the U.S. and Canada.
That's right.
It's because it's Scream Factory.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we don't get these very often, so I just want to say...
Woo!
Take that, England.
Yeah, England.
Suck it, nerds. How do you like your Brexit now?
Damn.
And
they're
finally,
just going to turn around and say terrible things about us.
Whatever, dude. People say terrible things about us all the time.
It's so easy.
Us in particular.
Oh, yeah. Well, you guys.
You're trying to say nobody says anything terrible about you?
No one says anything terrible about me at all.
Not yet. But come midsommar.
Come midsommar. I reckon.
Finally, we're ending on a dour note for Alex. Luke Perry has passed away. Came as a total shock to everybody when news appeared over the weekend that Luke Perry, star of Riverdale and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, suffered a massive stroke. But that shock only amplified when news of his passing surfaced on March 4th. Per TMZ, according to his rep, Luke was surrounded by his children, Jack and Sophie, his fiancée, Wendy Madison Bauer, ex-wife, Minnie Sharp, mother, Ann Bennett, stepfather, Steve Bennett, brother, Tom Perry, sister, Amy Coder, and other close family and friends. Perry became a household name, of course, after his popularity on the hit show 90210, and will be seen in the upcoming Quentin Tarantino film Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I think that says a lot, too, when your ex-wife is there at your...
Yeah.
He was apparently a really nice guy.
I'm not disputing that. I'm sure he was.
95 acting credits. 100 episodes of 90210.
Jesus Christ. Was that really on that long?
It was on for 10 years.
And it was 100 episodes, so it was like a 10 episodes a year?
I don't know.
I guess so.
I'm not an expert on how many episodes.
Honey, you seem to love Luke Perry so much. Well, I did not know this.
And I do like... Oh, I'm sorry, 200 episodes.
Okay. I was going to say.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's much better.
Is that 20 episodes a season?
Okay. Yes. If it was on for 10 years.
He was only in 199 of them.
Oh, no.
So he was off one day.
Did they kill him off?
No.
Oh. It would have been so prescient if he had
a lot of people died.
It would have been so prescient if he had like a stroke in the 199th episode of that.
You know, I don't remember the final episode of. Guys, he was also in The Fifth Element.
Was he in The Fifth Element?
It was Billy.
That's a bit part.
He was still in it.
I think he said. I think he had like 4 lines in that whole
movie. He had 8 lines.
Oh my God. He's a star.
Alex bringing the facts.
Don't be a dick.
Alex bringing the facts, dude. Dropping the fact bombs on Sam.
I never watched Riverdale. But...
watched a few episodes in it.
Was it
I have
good?
A high school friend of mine that's in that show.
Oh, well, does he have 4 lines?
No, he's one of the main characters.
No one gives a shit.
Luke Perry! Luke Perry.
Law and Order.
Everybody's on Law and
Order. Yeah, everybody and their mother was on Law and Order, dude.
Absolutely.
I've been in an episode of Law and Order.
Nobody saw it. No one cares.
You're right. You're right.
Literally nobody watched your episode.
You're right. The state of my life, apparently.
Literally no one cares about you.
I actually haven't been in an episode of Law and Order. Please don't look it up.
It's not on your IMDb page. No, wait, you don't have an IMDb page.
I'll make one. I'll credit myself as being one of the episodes of Law and Order.
There's so many to choose from. No, I don't even know if like you could just be like the guy who's like unloading or loading a truck that when the police ask him a question, he doesn't actually stop doing what he's doing.
Yep.
Even though normally, like, you would.
So the cold open to every episode?
Yeah.
No, I'll just find some big oaf with his back turned to the camera and be like, yep, right there,
that's me.
You're going to go after this and watch all 1,700 episodes of all of the Law and Orders to
just
find
so
which
can pick
one looks
out.
Like you?
Are
so
you guys can be like, weren't you, like, 4 when that episode came out? Shut up, that's me.
So are you going to be on Law and Order or are you going to be on SVU?
SVU, that's the superior show.
It is.
By far.
I mean, I agree.
Was Luke Perry in SVU or regular Law and
Order?
He
was in SVU.
All right. That gives him a little bit more street cred then.
I mean, I don't know.
SVU's the show that makes the episodes out of real life.
Luke and Order, Special Victims Unit.
Stroke and Victims Unit.
What?
That's fucked.
Kind of true, though.
You're right. You're right. All right. Sam.
Yes.
You got some stuff for us on the
list?
Oh,
I do. I got three of the craziest movies that I can't wait to get my fucking hands and eyeballs on.
Yeah, I'm excited about one of these in particular.
Yeah, so let's dive into the Now Slaying.
This just in, Alex killed Luke Perry. Sam, what do we have on the list?
Oh, fuck, man. All of you guys. Seriously. I'm not playing your game anymore. Next time we're trying to memorialize someone that I think is stupid, I'm going to be such a fucking dick about it.
Do it. That's what that's what our listeners want.
Good. I'm going to be such a fucking
asshole.
Come on.
We all need to stop pretending to actually care
about
people.
I care.
We need to stop pretending about caring about people and just admit that we're just three hateful motherfuckers.
No, I don't lump me in with you. I thought, well, I'm not you.
How dare you?
I don't want to be around you.
You're such a bad liar.
What do you got? What do you got on the list?
All right, so
nobody cares about your stupid fucking movies.
I care about one of them.
Okay.
That's a lie. This week, they're great. So there's only three of them this week. They're all VOD releases, and they came out on Tuesday the 5th. First up from August Heart Entertainment, starring the ever-present Tom Arnold. Dead Aunt, with Tom Arnold, Sean Astin, and Jake Busey, of all people.
Yes!
I'm so excited for this movie.
What's it called? Oh, Dead Aunt?
Dead Aunt. When the 80s one-hit wonder glam metal band Sonic Grave embarks on a road trip to Coachella.
I needed to hear.
In hopes of a comeback, their peyote trip pit stop in Joshua Tree incites a grisly attack, and they must rock themselves out of harm's way. It's kind of like Party Bus to Hell meets Arachnophobia, and I'm so excited.
I like that Sean Astin's in it. Like Tom Arnold.
Oh. I love Tom Arnold. That dude's crazy as fuck and does so much coke. Next up, Palmer's new favorite movie as he keeps diving into the... trying to say that he doesn't like powerful women. Among the Shadows from Momentum Films and VMI Worldwide, also on the 5th. Christy Wolf, played by Charlotte Beckett, is a Brussels private eye descended from werewolves who must go to work when her uncle Harry Goldstone is murdered in a politically motivated attack. Patricia Sherman, played by Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah.
The wife of a European Federation president, Richard Sherman, hires Wolf to investigate Goldstone's killing as he was her husband's campaign manager. Wolf finds bodies falling all over city and must use her innate instincts to unravel the case and stay alive long enough to unmask the conspiracy.
Are you sure this one is not a porn parody?
This did not
Fingers
take place
crossed.
If this took place at Lindsay's reality show beach resort
beach
thing,
resort, yeah.
I would have believed it.
I just want to know when she's going to be in a women in prison movie.
When's
it going to happen?
Dude. It's coming.
It's just a matter of
time. She looks really rough.
It's coming. And then finally, from Octane Films and Street Entertainment, also on the 5th, Discarnate, a neuroscientist's obsession with a drug that expands the human mind, inadvertently unleashes a deadly supernatural force on his team. Judging by the trailer, it eats people to become people.
There's people wearing masks?
Yes, there was a creepy kid wearing a cat mask. Okay. So any movie with a creepy kid in a mask is always pretty good. Meow. But that's all we got.
That's it.
That's it this week.
Damn.
Free VOD thing. You don't have to leave your couch.
Good.
Just, I think all of these are available on Amazon and iTunes. So pick your poison, pay your $5, and enjoy yourself.
$5?
Only $5?
That's a fortune in the Old West.
78% of Google users like
Discarnate. How many Google users like Lindsay Lohan in Among the Shadows?
I can tell you. You just.
I will look up Dead Aunt.
What?
Dead Aunt has no review.
Oh,
but it does
no.
have a 56% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It doesn't have a Google user review.
Come on, Google users, get on it.
What's the one with Lindsay Lohan in it again?
Among the Shadows. It looks like if you take the werewolf storyline from all the Underworld movies and gave it like a true B-movie plot.
Took out Kate Beckinsale.
And took out Kate Beckinsale. Like, this is the werewolf side of that franchise.
I'm into it.
I'm waiting for the inevitable crossover.
It only has 64% users like this movie. And Google users fucking like everything.
That's pretty low for Google users. I don't think I've ever seen anything below 74.
Oh, shit. No.
That's pretty low. So what you're telling me, this is actually might be a bad movie, guys.
No, because they've liked some movies that have gotten really bad scores elsewhere. So this might actually be a good movie then. Judging by the trailer, I'm pretty sure.
No, this is not a good movie.
I can safely guarantee this is not going to be a good movie.
That's literally one of the stupidest things I've ever heard you say.
100% ready to put this on my top 5 films of the year.
Yeah, there's werewolves and guns and explosions.
That werewolves in prison movie.
Boobies. Did you watch that?
Not yet.
No, that's the first one. You need to watch. Did you watch the Dracula one?
Dracula in prison.
Oh, God. I got to watch
it. You
got to
keep up with the story arc. Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep it
canon. You have to know why Dracula's there.
You're right. You're
and then why did he leave?
Yeah.
No. We'll
and then where? Out. Why did the werewolves come?
That's a good question.
And did he ride out on a wagon?
All these questions and more will be answered by next week, I promise you, fans.
Did he have spurs on his boots? Did he have a snake in his boot?
Don't squat on your spurs.
I'm just going to... We're moving on to the main event now. I'm cutting it here.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
Today I learned Alex is going to join a death metal band. She's going to be pretty successful from what I can tell.
That was Alex.
All right, this week we're covering our first Wicked Western. I don't know why that's hard for me.
You're having
to say
a hard time with that, babe.
Wicked Western.
You did it because you didn't do your mouth warm-ups. Wicked
Western.
If you guys could see his face right now, you would be terrified. It's not cute.
This movie came out in 1990. Nobody's ever heard of it. it is very hard to find stuff about this film. It is very hard to find this film, period. It was only ever released on VHS.
Mm-hmm.
And there were rumors that it may have existed on Laserdisc.
But no one knows.
It was probably ripped from VHS.
Right.
And for those of you listening that don't know what a Laserdisc is, think of it as a record that's made out of a CD.
Yes.
That's for a shittier version that was 10 times more expensive than a VCR.
Right.
You're
and
right.
Then it was on DVD for a little while, but that's also just ripped copies, right? From
yes. Yes. Yeah.
The same terrible potato quality.
The writer and director of this is Wayne Coe. The cast.
Potato number one.
This is a cast. James Earl Jones as
potato
Morrison.
Number one.
As potato number one. Brad Dourif.
As potato number two.
As Farley. Will Hare as Lee. Mark McClure as Tom. Michelle Joyner as Jenny. William Atherton, Arthur. Lisa Eichhorn as Maureen. Wendy J. Cook as Eva. Scott Paulin as Martin. And Jennifer Barlow as Sarah. Grim Prairie Tales is about as unusual an anthology as anthologies get. Not really so much horror as it is a Western Twilight Zone of sorts. This film actually makes a lot of social commentary in ways rarely seen during this era of filmmaking. It's actually got quite a cult following as a result for being a feminist horror film, which is interesting. The film is also marked as the only directorial outing of Wayne Coe, who is primarily known for storyboarding and set direction. He's worked on stuff like The Core, Out of Africa, Seven, Island of Dr. Moreau, Back to the Future, and tons more.
Well, he was also the, didn't he do the cover art for a bunch of...
Yeah,
like
he did
Back
cover
the
art and poster art and all sorts of stuff for a bunch of releases. This anthology dredges up 5 stories in total if you count the deeds of... count the story of Deeds and Morrison. Each one featuring prominent commentaries that explore moral gray areas using a convincing Western backdrop. What's even more surprising is the fact that this film's message and overall tone is one that still speaks up to this day. Mm. It's true. I think this movie does a pretty good job of actually standing the test of time.
It holds up, yeah.
I was surprised. What I went into expecting to be a fun anthology film exploring horrors in the West turned out to be something much, much more. The film begins with and is arguably carried by the performances of James Earl Jones and Brad Dourif, who play Morrison and Farley respectively. Using an excerpt from The Observer, an online magazine I'll offer up the most accurate and succinct synopsis I've been able to find. City clerk Farley Deeds, played by Brad Dourif, who is making his way by horseback to Florida to see his wife and her ill mother, is joined at his prairie campfire by bounty hunter Morrison, James Earl Jones, who is transporting a scalped corpse on his horse. After his initial trepidation wanes, Farley engages in a sinister story swap session with his cantankerous visitor. The eerie narratives include a tale of a callous cowboy who disrespectfully passes through an Indian graveyard, which at this point everybody knows is a big no-no.
You don't do that.
It's a big no-no. A young traveler who seeks aid a pregnant woman roaming the plains, a settler family whose patriarch harbors a dark secret, and a gunslinger who takes part in a gruesome showdown that haunts him long afterwards. The fifth story, of course, is the Deeds Morrison Summit. So, with that as an introduction to the film, why don't we jump in to, I don't know, just the way we meet Deeds and Morrison. What are your guys' thoughts on these characters, on the acting prowess of two of,
all right,
I don't know, some of the most prominent actors in horror Absolutely. And sci-fi at that point in time.
I feel like their characters couldn't be any more different from each other, right?
Right. Yeah.
So you have this like city slicker guy who's kind of setting up shop in the middle of the night, and then
it was really weird seeing Brad Dourif play a normal character.
Yes.
It really was.
It was. And then James Earl Jones with that terrible wig on his
That was amazing. You mean the amazing wig?
It was so good.
That was pretty bad.
Well, see, the thing is, so like,
but he rocked it.
He's the so
version
it worked.
But the version I was watching, it was so hard to actually make out his face half the time.
Yeah. And I don't even think that had anything to do with like it being on YouTube. Like, I think
that's just how it looked.
Because I've read some other reviews for it, and they're all like the quality of like the lighting was just garbage in like, some places.
The only thing, I'm pretty sure everybody's been able to find this YouTube riff that exists.
The only thing that I could like make out was when he would open his mouth and that crazy fucking laugh of his.
Right.
I was like, yes, James Earl Jones, I love you.
But I think that the their story, kind of the one that wove throughout the movie, was, in my opinion, the best part. Their candor towards each other and like how they played off one another was hilarious.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think their introduction, right? The way they kind of like, they're very standoffish, right? Mm-hmm. And so they both treat each other like the stereotypical like character types that they are, right? Like Morrison just thinks, what's his name?
God,
Deeds is just like a city boy.
Right.
Keeps calling him a city boy the entirety of the time. And Deeds just thinks Morrison's this like washed up fucking like hick bounty hunter that's been too far in the dirt of the desert for too long.
I mean, he did show up with a dead guy on his horse.
That's true.
So, I mean, I'd be like, ooh. Also, where was he coming from?
Morrison?
Yeah. Because I do remember at one point in the movie, he was like, if you're ever in Seattle, but there's no way that he was going all the way from Seattle to Jacksonville, Florida.
Well, he was trying to go to Montana at a certain point.
I think he said he was like getting ready to
Morrison. Go. Morrison. I'm talking about Deeds.
Oh.
He's going to Florida.
From where, though?
Which, even in the 1800s, the north, going to Jacksonville still sounds like a fucking terrible idea.
I was going to say. Because he was supposed to be there in a week, and I was like,
trying to see Limp Bizkit, dude.
He's like, I gotta ride 100 miles a day to get
He's
there.
He's a redneck fucker from Jacksonville.
Why can't they play around your birthday? I'd be happy to go see them.
I mean, they might.
Maybe. Maybe gotta, next year. Maybe next year won't be Korn. Maybe it'll be Limp Bizkit next
and Alice
year.
In Chains. Okay.
With Korn.
All right, so he said at a certain point that he would have needed to ride 100 miles a day to get there in 4 days.
Who's mm-hmm. he?
Deeds.
Yeah.
So, what the, where are they that he's 400 miles away from Jacksonville?
Probably Georgia.
Come from Chicago?
Maybe North Carolina? Because Jacksonville's right at one of the northern points of Florida, so.
So, according to this, mm-hmm. which is the time and date website that does distances and everything, Winston-Salem is 406 miles away from Jacksonville. Knoxville is 409 miles away.
Knoxville, Tennessee?
Yeah.
I could see that.
Or Huntsville, Alabama is 418 miles away.
Yeah.
So
he'd already been traveling for 3 days?
Something like that. So he was on the home stretch.
Halfway there.
I guess so.
He just wanted to ride through the night. Maybe they should just ride through the night. Take a little nappy.
Yeah, well, he was like, James Earl Jones wanted to hang out.
Yeah dude.
No, James Earl Jones wanted to do a lot more than hang out.
They became besties.
They did become besties.
James Earl Jones wanted to go to Acalachi, Montana, and go check out some sin palaces.
Yeah. Is that what he said?
He knew the two best sin palaces in Acalachi, Montana, because all James Earl Jones wants to do is get drunk, gamble, and bang hookers.
Until he met Deeds. Then he just wanted to go to...
No, he wanted Deeds to come with him.
But then he didn't. Then he went with him.
You couldn't let Deeds have the last story. I couldn't let Deeds have the last
story. So was there any point in the movie where you thought that maybe Morrison was going to kill Deeds? Did anyone get that vibe?
I think at the beginning.
Yeah.
Before Deeds pointed out all of his guns.
Yeah. Because all of a sudden that whole, like, their whole... Once they called each other out for their fucking arms,
right?
They literally have this like borderline arms race. Yeah, well, I have this. After that point, I think things dissolved, right? Because immediately, as soon as he realizes the city boy is not going to take his bullshit, like it goes from tension to all right, let's tell some
to
tales.
Camaraderie. Well, that was the one thing they had in common, right?
Yeah, that's true. They both enjoyed telling these bizarre fucking stories to each other.
Yeah.
And there's only enough room on the back of that horse for one dead body anyway.
And he says he wasn't going to last
the whole time. You're not going to last anyways.
You're not going to last 8 days.
Just kicked him off.
Yeah. But let's jump into the first story.
Okay.
First story.
Told by Morrison.
Yes. So Morrison kicks things off. Well, there's only one story told
by
Farley.
Yeah, so he tells the first two, and then it's...
Right. So the first story is kind of like what I expected the majority of this movie to be like. When the first story hit, I was expecting the rest of the movie to be kind of in the same vein. So we get basically a cocky, for lack of a better word,
an old grumpy cowboy.
Who knows where he is. He knows he's on this sacred Indian land, but he doesn't give a shit.
No.
He doesn't give a shit. He's like, nope, it's the shortest way. Yeah. We'll make it. And you know what? I feel like in horror films, there's a general theme, right? You take the shortcut.
You're going to die.
You're going to die. Yeah. It happens in every horror movie.
Every horror movie.
The word cut is in it for a reason.
He better skedaddle if he's going to get soaked with a soft soldier.
Yep. So it's interesting, right? Jesus Christ. He runs into an old Indian man.
Right.
Who at first glance seems like he's dead.
Right. And then he kind of starts harassing him. Like, why would you lie down? Yeah.
He's raising sand.
He is raising sand. I feel like the old, because the cowboy's quite old. And I think seeing that old, that other old man kind of laying down there to die, probably, him.
Yeah. Yeah.
He saw a little bit of himself in that man.
Maybe.
Like, don't just lie down and die.
Yeah. And so he gets close to him once he realizes that he's still alive. Because he starts kind of like sputtering and moaning. Yeah. And so he gets close to him and gets close to him.
Come here.
Yeah. He's kind of like beckons him closer, right? The dying Indian guy. And he leans in, and then all of a sudden he just Mike Tyson's him. Just rips that ear, just bites that a chunk of his ear right off, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at first the old crotchety cowboy's all mad about it. Well, what the hell did you do that for? Blah blah blah. Oh, you're just telling me not to sass you.
Yeah. You got some spunk left in you.
You didn't have to go and do that, but okay. You're just telling me you didn't want to take my shit. And so he gets the bite and puts on his bonnet that we kind of see like a resurgence of later.
Yeah, where'd
in the
he
film.
Get that bonnet from?
I think it was supposed to just be like a like gauze, but it just looked like a bonnet. I don't know.
It absolutely looked like it was supposed to be a bonnet.
Wraps it around the wound in his ear.
And he doesn't even tie it that tight. Like,
No. And
a terrible first aid job.
Yeah. So we kind of what he leaves the scene and he's stranded in the desert for quite some time, and you see him drinking, and he goes through the stereotypical, like, getting more and more thirsty, hotter and hotter. But there's these drums that are just like pervasive throughout the entirety of his duration out there. He looks behind him, he's like, don't they ever stop drumming?
No,
not at all. And so we kind of follow his slow and pitiful, for lack of a better word, because it really is kind of pitiful towards the end of their demise.
But does he take a nap or something?
Yeah, he takes like a nap in like the twilight.
Kind of drunk, right?
He does some other stuff. This one was like, it turned out for me, like I the hype for this story got me all there. I was like, ooh, Indian burial ground. I kind of love this one. Ended up being one of the more lackluster stories for me.
Yeah.
Through this one. And God, I can't even remember.
So
what
he like kind of took a nap, right? And then you all of a sudden the drumming, the banging, and then all of a sudden you see like a bunch of First Nations people are like making a grave over him.
Yep.
And then they cover it up with like some out in the end, and then he's buried alive.
Yeah.
And there's kids playing around it, laughing, and he's just like, rah!
Yeah. And it just kind of ends. And I think it's funny, like, the way the story just ends, because there's no real, like sense of, like, resolve or anything to it whatsoever. I think
you just are supposed to assume that he died in there with his bonnet.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And it's funny because, like, Brad Dourif does, like, a good job. His character, like, immediately responds with the whole, like what
yeah
he kind of voices like what I guess the viewer is thinking, or at least what I was thinking, right?
He's like, why would you say he was an old man? And like he started asking him all these questions,
like, what's the point of the story? Why is he an old man? Why did you have him get buried by like the young? And he's trying to make more and more out of this, right? And
because it's a stupid story.
Not according to James Earl Jones.
Well, you know, that's kind of what he says, right? He's like, a story is a story. Like,
it is the way I told it. Yeah. That's how it is. This was also, I think, the worst shot. It was so dark.
Yeah.
Through the majority of the film, you really couldn't see what was going on.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It does pick up after this, which I was happy about.
Yeah, I was kind of a little worried at that point that this movie was going to be.
So this is kind of like the weak link, in my opinion, of all the stories that were here. And I think it, like I said, the movie does a good job of kind of like pointing out the way the viewer feels about it. So I think like maybe when Wayne Coe was writing this, he was like, maybe this is the weak one. And we're kind of like, I'll voice it in the film and keep them going throughout the rest of it.
It's so meta.
It is.
It's kinda, self-aware.
It is kind of meta when you think about it. So the second story the pregnant woman. Now this one was a mind fuck, right?
Yeah.
I loved this one. Did you? This was my favorite of the four.
Uh-huh.
So this is basically kind of like a white knight story, right? So this man just is
on his way to go see his wife.
Yep. He's in the desert. And he stumbles across this woman who's all alone, wandering by herself.
Like 9 months pregnant.
Yeah, and just like very clearly pregnant, very clearly like in, well, I guess not. She looks like she might need help, right? Like, I guess if you're just like a nice person, then
right. And you'd want to give her help. And right? She says she was all right.
Well, she also got spooked because he rides up on her. And she's like, oh, God, no.
Ah! I know. I'm surprised it took her that long to hear him. He was kind of trolloping behind her for quite a minute. I don't know if trolloping is the right word.
Trolloping is not the right word.
Galloping is.
Trolloping is like hooking.
Yeah.
It's the action of a trollop.
Some sort of like Western lingo for that. What was that one? It's hotter than a nickel on a.
Oh,
I don't even know. Anyways.
An angry bull's teat.
Yeah, something like that. But he stops. He stops and he tries to give her some help, right? And he's like, you know, you can come with me. I'll take care of you. We'll figure things out for you. And he starts off kind of like the Good Samaritan, right? Like he tries to give her a blanket in the middle of the night while they're by the campfire.
Well, before they even set up camp, though, he's following her for a while.
I thought she was following him.
Was she?
Yeah, because he kept slowing down, and she was like, I'm fine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought it was her following him.
But they kind of both decided together that they were going to stop just up yonder at the flat part.
Yeah.
Over there in the prairie.
The whole thing is the prairie.
So they set up camp for the night, and it starts to get cold. So he tries to give her one of his blankets. He's playing the white knight card a little bit too hard.
He offered her his coat, and she told him.
Yeah. And so they make a small meal and kind of have some banter, and they're getting ready to go to sleep. And all of a sudden, like, it kind of like she does like a full 180 of like stopping, like, not wanting the advances, to like all of a sudden she's like, no, yes, no, yes, no.
And then she makes this weird gurgling noise with her stomach. And then all of a sudden she's like,
I lied to you.
She's not pregnant anymore. She was like, and then she just wasn't pregnant.
Yep. Whatever was in her belly just kind of disappears. And she looks at him. Chipotle. She's like, I'm sorry. Chipotle.
Absolutely.
And she looks at him. She's like, I'm sorry I lied to you. You know, some people are, it's hard for me to kind of be alone. I've
out
lived
here,
this life for as long as I have. I've been this way for quite some time. It's easier for me to lie and say that I'm pregnant, and people tend to leave me alone, or they feel bad for me. But you're not like the rest.
And she kept calling him Tommy or something. Yeah. Like, oh, Tommy.
Hey, Tommy.
Hey, no.
Hey, Tommy. So she kind of starts reaching for him. Like I said, she has this weird, like, dynamic within herself. It's like she makes the advances, makes it seem like she wants him, but then she's like, no, don't do it. And he's like,
yeah,
I'm gonna
do
it.
But she also has her hand on his dick.
Yeah, so she's like unbuckling his belt, but she's like, don't do it.
Maybe it's like an inner monologue with her. She's like, oh, he's such a good guy, I don't want to do this to him.
No, I think she's just a succubus.
Yeah, she absolutely is.
So of course
she's gonna trollop him.
She's
in the middle of trolloping.
Of course Tommy is thinking with the wrong head.
Even though he's married,
he's really thinking with the wrong head here. Mm. And he gets on top for some of the old missionary.
Missionary in the sand.
Yeah, baby.
Was it called missionary in the 1800s, or was it just called sex?
I'm pretty sure it's like been in, like, because I know in Virginia it was like the only legal position for such a long time. It was been in the law books as missionary for a while.
And if I know anything about Virginians, is they always stick to the law.
They always stick to the law, especially when it comes to lights out sex.
And anal.
So he gets on top of her for some old missionary.
For making a mash. Like a thoroughbred.
Jesus. And just as he's reaching his climax, you hear him go, oh, he's losing his mind. And he starts screaming a little too loud.
Yeah, it doesn't seem pleasurable
at
some point.
The camera zooms in on his face, and you realize that there's a look of shock, a look of surprise. And I did think that it was funny that IMDb tagged this moment with vagina dentata.
and then she gives him the mitten, according to this.
Is that cowboy speak?
Yeah.
Gives him the mitten.
to get the mitten. Sally gave him the mitten.
Oh, Jesus. Sally, why you got to give him the mitten?
And so she swallows him through her...
With her vajayjay.
And she's pregnant again.
Yeah, she swallows him through her vagina into her uterus, and now she is once again pregnant.
Curiously leaves
me... She goes
me
back to wandering the sands.
Curiously leaves me bamboozled as to figuring out how she eats Chipotle.
Is there enough room for both? Full grown man and a burrito?
She just wanted
the burrito's actually for the full grown man.
Okay.
She wanted some Tommy Koa with some extra sour cream.
And I'm not eating Chipotle anytime soon.
So gross.
And that wraps up that story. And it's interesting because there's a dynamic between
Morrison and Deeds.
Yeah, Deeds. And Deeds acts like he's repulsed by this, right? Even though he's like,
he loves it.
Been aroused by this story. There's like he's like ashamed of himself, right? He liked the story a little too
he's
much.
Trying to scream his boner down.
Yeah, right. Exactly. He's like, that was disgusting.
But Morrison isn't buying it. No, he's like, y'all city fucking
laughing.
Bitches always say that.
Yeah, y'all are the same. You want me to tell a story with some shock value. Once we get to the shock value, you immediately dismiss it, right?
Clutching your pearls, yeah.
And so that's kind of like the monologue, or not monologue, but the banter between the two of them, and before the third story.
I know, and then there's the coffee. This is hilarious.
Yeah. Have some coffee.
I don't want any coffee. He's like, it's not ready. He's like, I don't know.
Now give me some coffee. Yeah.
I think they were just the two most adorable people.
They were like grumpy old men.
They were so cute. Do you want some coffee? I don't want any coffee.
I don't want any coffee.
Okay, give me some coffee.
Me and Sam at like 70.
Yeah. Well, then they ended up drinking a lot of coffee.
Yeah, yeah. So with that, they lead into the third story. This one is also because the fourth one's this is
the one that's told by
this is Farley's story.
Yeah, this is the one told by Farley. So this one's one of the more interesting stories because it's the only one that's not rooted in anything
supernatural.
Yeah. It's grounded in reality and explores some of the dark sides of humanity in general. And I actually found this to be one of the more chilling stories, just kind of in general for this movie.
And of course, it's fucking William Atherton.
Who's that? Who that?
He was the dad.
But who? What is he?
Oh, Walter Peck himself.
Yeah, old Dickless Walter
old
Peck.
Dickless Peck.
He was also the so he's like typecast as just a piece of shit.
Yep.
To the point where I don't know if it's just he's typecast or if that's just who
he
is.
Actually, is
if
like
he's
that.
Just like a different version of James Woods.
Oh God.
But yeah, he's Dickless in Ghostbusters. He's a piece of shit professor in Real Genius. Mm-hmm. He's the piece of shit reporter in Die Hard. Mm-hmm. He's the piece of shit psycho eco terrorist in Biodome.
Yeah.
Oh, he is. You're right.
Yeah. Same guy.
Oh my God.
In every movie.
I love Biodome.
Yep.
Free Bobby Bunny. So good.
Took my mom to see that movie. She left halfway through it.
I was like, this is the fucking
theater.
Garbage.
Left me in the theater. She's like, I don't even, like, how can you watch this? She gave me that look of disappointment.
Oh.
She didn't even give me that when I dragged her to see Jackass. She gave me that look when I dragged her to see Biodome.
I don't blame her. I love that movie, though.
That was a great...
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with the movie.
You know, like a,
you were just trying to prime. Think globally.
Yeah,
that's she all. Just wanted to think locally.
Yeah.
Globally.
Yeah. So yes, as Alex mentioned, it does feature William Atherton, he's got a daughter. He plays a father of a family, right? They're looking to start fresh. They've got this opportunity to build their lives literally from scratch in the Old West.
After the Civil War.
Yep. After the Civil War, they find their little plot of land, right? And they're like, this is where we're going to start our home. This is where our family's going to go, right?
Kind of like the South, but it's in the North.
Yeah. Sort of.
Kind of. They're like, it's just like home.
But not.
But not.
We got our wagon.
Yeah. That wagon was dope.
That was. Their fucking dining room set was like dope as fuck. That shit probably cost a lot of money.
They set up, put flowers on the table and everything for their mm-hmm. first like dining table in the middle of the field.
They know how to camp.
Yeah, they do. That's glamping.
You
that's
know
glamping.
What he doesn't know how to do?
What's that?
Dishes.
Right.
He did just leave. He had other things.
Where did
going
he
on.
Go?
He
Palmer.
He had to go hang out with his friends.
Oh, no. No.
All right. So,
no.
He had a daughter named Ava.
Eva.
Who's played by Wendy J. Cook, who went on to be in Cocoon, and 976 Evil.
Cancun.
She was also in The Wonder Years.
Oh, my God. I love The Wonder Years.
And he had a wife named Maureen. So they seem to be this happy family, right? They're discovering their new plot of land. And then they're excited about the prospects of this homestead. And then all of a sudden at night after dinner, this group of riders approach in the night and, they mentioned they've got some business to attend to.
Their horses need new shoes.
And they say they need Arthur's help. And, considering the reaction of Maureen, which is disheveled to say the least, we kind of, as an audience, know that there's something more at stake than just business here. Ava awakens in the middle of the night and wanders away from the camp. Not too far away from the camp, mind you.
No, it's like super close.
Yeah, right. To discover that her father has become a part of a lynch mob that's taking pleasure in hanging a family of people. Unfortunately, due to the video quality, we can't say for sure whether or not they were black or like Native American.
We can pretty much say for sure they were black or Native American.
Oh, well, yeah, one of the two, but not which.
I just think it's kind of like what you assume, right? But they also like made the point of saying that they were like badly burned and like all this other stuff throughout the thing. So I think it's kind of assumed, but you don't actually know. 100%.
I feel like they were probably black just because they were making such a big deal about talking about the Civil War.
Yeah. And director's interviews, I was hoping to get some insight on that scene, but he doesn't comment on that at all.
He doesn't.
But Ava screams after seeing her father do it. Well, it's not just the fact that they're hanging there, right? It's the fact that she witnesses her father, like, literally giving them a fucking spanking as their fucking burned, charred bodies are, like and smiling and taking pleasure in what's going on, right? So she screams and runs away, and Arthur tries to keep Eva under control, but he's unsuccessful, and Maureen seizes control of the situation with a shotgun blast into the night sky. The next scene involves an intimate conversation between mother and daughter that explains the reasoning that Maureen has willingly stayed with somebody that she knows is a killer.
Right, and who's done this multiple times before.
Yeah, and so it turns out that Maureen was pregnant with Ava before she married Arthur, but he married her anyways when most men would have turned their backs on her and has loved her ever since. So that's kind of how she...
As long as she stays out of his way.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, because he threw her down on the ground when she tried to get him to stop.
Yep. But that's I guess that's how she, like, rationalizes it, right? Like, without...
Well, and she says that she knows that he's not evil like all those other men. And
even though he very clearly is.
He clearly is. She's completely delusional. But she makes it like her mission to try and get him to stop.
Right.
He doesn't listen to what she says.
So do you guys think that this was the revealing moment for Eva? Do you think that up until this point she thought he was her dad, like her legitimate father? Because I couldn't really tell from that scene. Like, she just drops the bomb, right? And to us as an audience, it's a bomb because we don't know. But Eva doesn't really react
to
it.
Oh, wait. So she was... What? What? Huh?
That's Eva. Eva isn't his daughter.
Oh, I thought that she just got pregnant and then he married her anyways.
She was pregnant from somebody else.
That's not her dad.
Yeah, that's not her dad at all. And so Eva doesn't really react to that bit of information.
I have to make her understand.
She's more, I think part of it had to do with the fact that she's very clearly upset about what she just witnessed, and she's trying to figure out why the fuck her mom is still with him.
That's a lot of shock to take in at one point in time.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is.
I just didn't understand the last part.
Well, yeah, because so she wakes up the next morning, her dad's chopping some wood, and she says he says he needs to go to town, and he's getting his wagon all ready to go, and he goes to the he's riding down the path, the trail.
She finds her bonnet.
The terror.
She gets out to go get her bonnet.
Well, no, she hops in the thing, right?
Yeah, she's
and
in
then
the
she gets out and grabs her bonnet, goes back to the wagon, and she gives him a hug and says, "I love you, Dad."
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like her accepting it too.
Like mother, like daughter.
I guess so. Maybe they're
but that's not her dad.
It is now.
Oh, it is now. Yeah, she's accepting that fact, right?
Like, so they're both just accepting him for who he is.
I guess so.
You take the good with the bad, Alex.
Not that you don't.
Yeah, I don't know that
I'd straight kick that guy out of my house.
Although this is a different time.
But then
time.
He would lynch you.
It's a simpler time.
What is this woman supposed to do without her husband? Her vagina can't eat people.
Yeah.
So you're saying that
unless the continuity is there and she is the woman wandering the desert.
And that daughter is just all of the people she's consumed.
I'm sure there were women in the Wild West who took care of themselves.
Yeah, yes. One of them Hooers. Had a tattooed they chin. Yeah, she was like, what's her name? Everybody knows who she is. Tattooed chin girl from that show.
I don't know what Palmer's talking girl. About, but
what
I can.
What are you talking Wild about? West.
I can clearly say that the women that take care of themselves are all the hooers that James Earl Jones
What about visits. The saloon owner?
James Earl Jones visited her, too.
You never heard of Olive Oatman?
Olive Oatman? I don't.
You serious?
That's a chin tattoo woman?
Yeah, it's a chin tattoo woman.
Popeye's girlfriend?
Oh.
She's from, she's obviously from real life, but she was in that show Hell on Wheels. I love that show because this train will go west, goddammit.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, that's what happens. If you don't have a husband with your baby, then you get chin tattoos and you become all of them.
I sound real misogynistic right now.
Dude, no. It's the time!
No, there were women who took care of themselves.
Yes, and James Earl Jones was a great patron.
You're real sassy today.
I have a whole retcon of James Earl Jones because of this movie where he ends up looking like Darth Vader because of a really bad uncured case of syphilis.
Okay. I could see it. So it's like
from
it's
one of these
like
sin palaces,
a steampunk fucking Darth Vader from the Wild
he just
Wild
goes
West.
To one of these sin palaces and he comes down with a terrible case of syphilis that makes him look like a crusty piece of shit that's missing limbs because they fell off.
Alex is over here desperately Googling stuff to get us to shut up.
Oh, no, I'm ignoring y'all. I'm just reading about wild women of the West.
Were they friends with James Earl Jones?
Probably. But that's where this story ends.
Yes.
That is where that story ends. Yeah. And it's just the hugging your killer daddy.
I love you, Dad. Well, she didn't want to get lynched.
Yeah, I guess that's probably true. One way to avoid getting lynched, right?
Yeah.
Next up, the fourth story, the final story that's being told by these two.
That James Earl Jones has to pick from, like, his memory bank of 1,000 stories.
Right? And so at this point, like, he's so impressed with Brad Dourif's story that he has to shoot a gun at a cactus like 15 times and then inhale the gun smoke from the barrel.
You got to get in the right frame of mind, man.
Take a swing of something that immediately makes him start bleeding from the mouth.
Yep.
And then what else does he do?
Spits a bunch.
Yeah, spits a whole bunch, puts more chewing tobacco into his mouth and gets himself all prepped. And then starts digging through his brain. He's like, all right, I got this. This final story is going to top everything else.
Adjust his wig a little bit. There's this Key and Peele sketch, and I can't remember which one it is specifically, but Jordan Peele has this like exact same wig on that's like black. It looks just like a mop. And I got a total... That totally reminded me of that wig.
All right. And so this final story was actually, like, I don't know, this was... Kind of went along the lines of what I more along what I expected.
This was the spookiest one.
I think it kind of goes in line with the first one as to like I expected more stories kind of like this.
Yes.
To be told, and it's basically a gunslinger who really is just a murderer, right? He's a killer for hire that doesn't.
He doesn't see himself that way.
Yeah, though. He doesn't see himself as a killer. He's just a man who's doing a job. Yeah. He's a working man.
Working man.
He's listening to Rush. He's shooting people in the throat. And
making that money.
Yeah, exactly. And so he gets into this gruesome showdown, right, with a Mexican, and he shoots him in the throat, and this Mexican doesn't immediately keel over and die, right? He bleeds from his throat onto him. He tackles him.
He does. And then bleeds all over his face.
Profusely bleeds all over his face, right? What the hell movie was that? Was that there's goddamn, what movie was that? Was it Fight Club? Where Brad Pitt like bleeds all over that one guy, right? Like he's stop it.
Yes.
Because he gets pummeled by the like senator or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. He starts just like bleeding on his face. That's kind of what it reminded me of, even though that movie came out 11 years after this movie did.
Continuity.
He's bleeding all over this gunslinger and gets blood all over his face, bleeds all over his clothes, and kind of like has they tussle. Yeah. It's more personal than you'd find the average duel to be, I think.
Right. Well, because they're both vying to be the head henchman for that rich guy, right?
Yes. Yes. Okay. And so like there's a lot of
riches, of
women. The highest, what did the rich guy say it was? The highest salary that you can get paid in this area or right. Something like that. Like you'll suffer no loss from here on out if you get this job. And so this gunslinger wins. He's traumatized, it seems, kind of like by what happens.
Yeah, which is weird because you get the impression that he's killed multiple.
But I also think it might be because he hasn't had like when he shot them from a distance. I think this whole thing is kind of like a commentary on guns.
Okay.
Like, period.
Right.
Right. Because like it's easy to kind of like shoot a target at a distance. It's harder if that target is like hand to hand. Right. Like when you actually have to get up in somebody's face and kill them, it's a much different story.
Like it would be harder to stab someone.
Yeah. Exactly.
Than to shoot them.
You have to be a lot more deliberate, right? Or it has to be like a crime of passion, which is what most murders are, right? Like,
I also assume, though, that if you're looking at the sense of duels, most of them are over like an issue between the two people, whereas like this one, it was just two guys that were forced to do this because whoever won got the job.
Right.
Yes.
I also think it's pretty bad form in a shootout to, once you've been shot, then attack your shootout.
The Mexican didn't think so.
No,
hey man, if he got that job, he would have had the money to heal himself up.
But I think that that's like poor form. I don't think you're supposed to do that.
you supposed to do? Just fall over?
Yeah. I mean,
fuck that shit.
You got shot. You lost.
If I'm not getting that job, you're not getting that job either.
Yeah. I'm going to bleed all over ass.
That's why no one wants to do being a duel with you, because you're not an honorable
man. If you are getting that job, you're going to have to buy some new fucking clothes, because I'm going to bleed all over you.
Yeah. I don't think
that's the way of the West.
Apparently it is in this.
I never said I would survive in the West.
No one thought that you could. Don't worry.
I would not have done well.
I don't even think you could survive camping for a
weekend. I think I, as a single woman, would survive better in the West than you.
She'd probably get them chin tattoos. Yeah, she'd be fine.
I love a chin tattoo.
Nah, she'd try to run a saloon.
I'd fucking be a madam.
Dude, she'd be a badass madam.
I treat my girls right.
And she'd be a lion. It'd be Deadwood, dude. She'd be bestest buddies with Swedgen.
I don't watch Deadwood, so I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Oh my god, Alex.
Oh my god, Alex.
Why don't you watch good television?
Because I'm busy watching The Bachelor.
So you're busy watching bad television.
Like Alaskan Bush People that just started last week.
Right, I know. And The Bachelor.
Anyways. So
I'm more than just about horror, Palmer.
Fresh off his Deadwood isn't horror, Alex.
No, I'm talking about The Bachelor.
Oh, yeah, but I'm talking about Deadwood.
I know, but I'm talking about The Bachelor.
So fresh off of his kill, right? He gets shacked up with a nice little lady,
which he seems to know.
I wonder if this is one of James Earl Jones's well-known sin palaces.
I think that he knows her.
Probably. This is probably how James Earl Jones got the story, because he heard this from one of the ladies
Sin Palace?
At his Sin Palace.
Yeah.
So he shacked up with a lady, and in the middle of the night he wakes up and he thinks, he has a bad dream. And we get this stellar piece of animation randomly.
Completely out of nowhere.
And he has this dream where it's him loaded in, he is the bullet inside of a casing, it's just his head, and he's loaded into a revolver and fired off at the Mexican, and then as he hits the Mexican his head blows up in this really really good piece of animation in this film.
Yeah.
And he just wakes up and there's blood, and she's like, oh, it's my curse.
That's right. That's what she calls her period.
And he immediately is kind of like revolted because of the fact that he had this dream and I guess was just bled on by this guy.
And she was like, chill out,
just calm down, we can wait until tomorrow to clean it up.
She's gotta get it cleaned up now.
So he throws a fucking fit, throws her out of the room, and immediately throws all the sheets and stuff out with her.
He's being a real dick.
Yeah, and starts yelling at her, and so she's screaming in the hallway, and eventually people kind of silence the situation. He goes back to sleep in a cold sweat, and he wakes up the next day, and he goes through his kind of normal morning routine, and they're waiting on him to shave, and then all of a sudden, while he's shaving with this straight razor, he gets like more and more itchy, I guess, not itchy in terms of literally being itchy, but he gets more twitchy, I guess, is the better way to describe it. He starts getting more focused on the razor, starts focusing a little bit more on it and taking his time a little bit more, the way that he's shaving his face. And then all of a sudden the ghost of a Mexican that he just slaughtered appears and helps guide the razor closer and closer to his throat.
Well, he was fully dressed and on his way out the door.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden
I need to clean up my 5 o'clock shadow.
Yeah.
And then the guy's like, don't be late, because that guy hates having to wait for people.
And yeah, he's waiting and knocking on the door. This random dude who's outside in the hallway, what are you doing? What are you doing? What's taking so long?
Are you coming?
Even though it's only been 30 seconds. What the fuck are you taking so long for? And so he finally slits his own throat, and that's the end of the story.
Yeah. Cool.
And so it's a question of whether or not it's trauma, right, or if it's actually the ghost of the Mexican,
right?
So it's interesting. I think it is a combination of both, or it's supposed to be maybe implied a combination of both.
Yeah, I kind of assumed he had PTSD.
Yeah, no. That's kind of what I went for too.
And thought it was a ghost.
My money was on ghosts, just because of all of Morrison's both of Morrison's other stories were supernatural in nature. I figured this one was too.
But then he followed up with Deed's story that was not supernatural, perhaps with another non.
It's true.
That is true.
Because they kind of,
he's like, oh, maybe my first two stories were too outlandish. Mm-hmm. Could be.
Maybe.
Who knows?
I certainly don't. But that's the end of this final story. And so then they realize they've been telling stories all night.
It's morning.
And Brad Dourif's character gets up and he's like, oh my goodness, it's morning. I got to get going. He's like, no, let's just sleep through the day. We'll hit the road at night. It'll be fine. We'll travel by night. It'll be great. You're going to be, what's he say? He says, you're something along the lines of you're going to be like too tired to ride on or something. Or you're an idiot if you ride in the desert in this heat without any sleep. That's what he says.
Right.
And Brad Dourif's like, no, there are only a few things that would keep me from hanging out with you right now. Because he admits finally that he's like, this has been good company. I've really enjoyed spending this evening, share these stories with you. He's like, there's only one thing that would rip me away, because he offers the best whorehouses that he's ever been to. He says, you know, we'll make a trek of it. We'll go have some fun. And he says, there's only one thing that'll keep me away from that. It's my wife. That's some dedication right there.
Well, in all the men in this movie who've been kind of totally shitty to their wives, he is a nice shining example of a good husband.
Yeah, yeah. So he's got a place to go.
I also just imagine by the end of this movie that most of frontier time was just traveling to see your wife.
You're right. It does seem like a lot of people were traveling to go see their wives.
And
then they become best friends forever.
They do. And so he says, you know, if you're ever traveling through my neck of the woods, you've got a bed to sleep in. You know, like, we'll share some more stories. And real quick, we learn that he's a bounty hunter.
Which is why he has a dead guy.
A bounty hunter, which is why he has the dead guy on the back of his horse. He reads out the description of the dead guy, and he's supposed to be missing some fingers. And he's got everything matches blow for blow until Brad Dourif says to him, you know, oh, wasn't he supposed to be missing some fingers? I didn't say that. I didn't say that. He's like, oh, okay, good. And then he looks at Morrison pulls out the description again, reads through it again, and he immediately cuts the dead guy off the back of his horse and says,
I thought he was going to cut his fingers off.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It would have made more sense. He would have gotten the bounty.
Yeah.
It would look too fresh.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
But instead, he just wanted to go hang out with his friend.
Yeah. So they join the trail, and for all we know, we're kind of led to believe that he probably rode back to Jacksonville with him.
I think that's where he went.
And
I'm
that
sure
a new friendship was started.
I'm sure there's criminals in Jacksonville.
Yeah, absolutely. Jacksonville. We know that there's redneck fuckers in Jacksonville.
We do know that.
Yeah. So that's kind of the end of this movie. I think this movie caught me by surprise for what it was. I was expecting it to be one thing, and it turned out to be something else. Turned out to be, like I said, a pretty good commentary on just all sorts of things. Life in that era, life in the modern era, kind of like women in general.
Racism,
violence, just all sorts of shit.
It kind of was the antithesis of your typical horror movie. You know,
it reminded
me
a lot of Tales in the Hood.
Yeah,
in terms of just
Tales in the Frontier.
Yeah, I mean, kind of.
Just kind of like in the sense that it was trying to make it was less ham-fisted, I think, than Tales from the Hood, but it was still trying to make a lot of comments about things that you just don't normally hear. You don't normally hear this kind of commentary in horror films, especially of that era, or
in
anthology films in general.
And Western
and
movies.
Westerns. Well, no, Westerns make them all the time, but if you're watching the wrong Westerns, if you're not...
I think a lot of Westerns are quite misogynistic.
I think it's supposed to be that way on purpose,
right,
to bring up a point.
Not every Western is
not
John
every,
Wayne.
Yeah, I know that. John Wayne has a statue. The most famous of all the cowboys.
Anyways, out of not missing fingers, what are we writing this?
Well, so how many leftover fingers or how many missing fingers?
Not well. Hold on. Before
I was going to say one thing
up,
before
Alex
we finish it. The that really famous cinematographer work. I feel like we kind of spend a little bit of time talking shit about how this movie's too dark and you can't really see anything. But this guy, I forget what his name is, Danzuz Kaminski, I think, who later became like the most, he's super famous. He works on like all of Steven Spielberg's movies. He did like Saving Private Ryan and War Horse and stuff like that. Worked on this movie. Not as the main cinematographer, but
oh, shit. Yeah, he did Schindler's List,
yeah,
Ryan.
So although the quality of this movie is a little bit potato, the
you gotta start somewhere, right?
You gotta start somewhere. And so the person who did the cinematography just ended up
Nicki Minaj's Chun Li music video.
Well, there you go.
I also think part of the like potato quality of this though is just
this was the second movie.
The budget.
Yes. Because it was like, what, $500,000 to make this movie?
It was $500,000. And a lot of the scenes were... So originally, Wayne Coe was shooting it. His plan was to shoot like a different anthology story every year.
Right.
And then they got Brad Dourif and James Earl Jones together and just shot all those scenes at once.
Well, because it was during some sort of strike, right? Hollywood strike?
Yeah.
And then they filmed a lot of it on, what's his name's ranch? Not Bob Dole.
Bob Hope, is that what you said? No.
Was it Bob Hope? Yeah, it was Bob Hope.
But I think part of it also is just like the quality of like the gear that they were using, considering their budget.
Right. Well, and I think a lot of the stuff took like because it took place at nighttime.
Yeah.
It's hard to get that.
And like 90s. that's there are obviously movies that have been made far prior to this movie that look way better.
Yes.
But they also had like actual budgets.
Well, $500,000 isn't nothing.
That's true.
Yeah, we've covered movies with far less budget than that.
Yeah. But he didn't go on to make any other movies after this.
Nope.
Except he made one documentary about
Well, he's still a prominent artist.
I looked up his website. I don't think that he's that prominent.
I found interviews with this guy like that relate to his artwork that he's hosted like entire fucking like art galleries.
Yeah, I don't know. I looked on his website. It looks kind of janksy.
I mean, maybe his website looks bad, but he's apparently
because he does
doing a lot of modern art these days.
Right. And he does like blacksmithing and stuff.
Yeah.
I think I don't know if that's what you
I don't know.
Black.
But that's interesting. I did not know that Janice Kaminski worked on this at all.
That guy's
I had missed that.
Everything that wins Oscars.
Yes, like literally.
Like, that's fucking silly.
You did fucking Little Giants, dude.
Like
the football movie?
Yeah. Janice Kaminski did?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that movie.
I do too. It's been forever since I've seen that movie. It's been forever since I've seen that movie. Anyways, back to Missing Fingers. What are we rating this out of?
I guess Missing Fingers. How many missing fingers are we giving this?
Yeah, sure.
How many leftover fingers? No.
Leftover fingers?
Sin palaces?
Ew, no. How many,
I kind of like that more. How many sin palaces are we rating this out of?
Is it out of 5 sin palaces?
Yes.
I thought there's only 2.
Well, that's James Earl Jones knew the 2 best ones.
Okay.
But we know
the 5.
We could potentially know the 5 best Sin Palaces.
I'm going to give this a 3.
Was one of them Robert Kraft's place in Florida?
Florida?
Was that in Jacksonville?
Probably. What are you giving it?
3.
A 3. A solid 3.
Solid
what are you giving
3.
It, Sammy?
I'm going to give it a 2.
A 2? Wow.
Brutal.
I'm giving it a 3.5. I really enjoyed this. I thought it was fun. Oh, damn it. 2.83333333333333.
You should have picked a better score, Sam.
Damn, Sam.
You should have picked the worst score.
Damn, Sam.
If he gave it a 3 instead of a 3.5, I know what that would have been.
But.
Well, it just wasn't meant to be, apparently, for this film. That's all right, though.
I'll tell you what. We can adjust that score for the bad lighting.
Okay.
Jesus. Compadres, it's quitting time on another episode of Terror Incognito. Next week, we're strapping on our galoshes and we're preparing to trudge deep into the... Wait, I guess we're not doing Blood River. What are we doing instead?
No, we are doing... What is it? Near Dark?
Is that Near Dark, yes.
Blood River is not available anywhere.
Blood River. We were going to do Blood River and then we tried to find it. We couldn't find it anywhere.
We were going to pay for it.
I was going to pay for it. I actually want to see that movie.
We couldn't find it anywhere. So Near Dark is what we're covering next week. So get yourselves ready, folks. It's bound to be a good time. You can follow us on social media, on Instagram. Delete it. Facebook. Why are you on Facebook? Twitter. They'll ban you. All at Terror Incognito. You can follow us individually, too. I'm Palmer at Sturmsworth.
Looters.
I'm Sam at Sam Heaves.
You want to go back to 2004? And it's time to jump into the time capsule known as email and shoot us one of them there messages at cast@terrorincognito.com. As always...
Keep it creepy.
We'll see y'all next week. Adios, partners.